Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, betweenthestripes.ie. While you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, Series 3, Episode 11 tonight. Kieran Burke and John Breyer in studio. An absolutely massive show, potentially our biggest of the season coming up tonight. And we will tell you about our guest lineup shortly. But first, we have to go to the big breaking news story today. John Caulfield and Cork City have parted company, and we're going to go straight to Cork now and hear from John O'Shea, local journalist in Cork, to give us the latest update on the situation. So straight to the big breaking news out of Turner's Cross today, and we go now to John O'Shea, local Cork City FC reporter. John, fill us in on the day's events.
Jeez, I saw like 24 hours earlier, I couldn't have seen this coming at all really. So, you know, basically the news obviously broke this morning that it was probably inevitable given the results and stuff and obviously performances were going in recent, well, over the last 12 months really, but you know, basically, obviously, it came out this morning. Then that's obviously the club released a statement around 9 o'clock in the morning saying that John Caulfield will be stepping down from his position as first team manager with immediate effect, and that John and the club came to a mutual agreement this morning at Bishopstown Stadium. And I suppose there was no real sign of it coming 24 hours earlier, because he obviously did his usual pre-match press conference ahead of the Bohemians game, and he was in a pretty adamant mood. He was confident that he could stop Ross and that things will turn around, and we just need to keep working hard. And you know, he was just saying a couple of games don't outweigh what's happened in the past 5 years. So maybe in terms of the timing from 24 hours, from going from business as usual to this, it might have been, you know, sudden for him. Maybe was under the impression that he would get a bit more time than what he's got. But you know, it's the end of an era and at the end of a journey. And I suppose it's been a magnificent journey that John Caulfield has taken the club on.
Absolutely fantastic is what he's achieved over those years of the club as manager. Do you get the feeling that it wasn't entirely John Caulfield's decision to step down?
I think, you know, obviously there's a new board there this year as well, and obviously they've you know, they could have had an easier run than what they've got. But I think ultimately, I think if you're looking at it maybe from their point of view, obviously budget cuts and some people are obviously maybe suggesting over the last 6 or 7 or 8 games that they've made that decision, but I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think if you look maybe going back to the Europe last year, around the performances in the Champions League against Legia Warsaw, and then gradually towards the end of last season, you know, the performances weren't great, the results obviously they weren't great, and I think crucially as well that the crowds were dwindling and they were dropping. And you could see as they were going on that downward spiral that the growing murmurings of discontent, they were in clear evidence in the stands and Turner's Cross, and even none more so. Even I saw there was only 1600 like for the Finn Harps game on Monday night, and then obviously even like I saw on a Friday, even the Shamrock Rovers a couple of weeks ago, I know like a crowd of 3000 might, for most clubs, be delighted with that, but for a half empty stadium for Shamrock Rovers coming down, it just showed you that the floating supporter, they weren't enjoying what they were watching, and you know, it had become stale.
Yeah, it all comes down to money in the end, isn't it? If the fans aren't going in, then it only generally ends up one way. That's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, it's just the way, I think, just, you know, the performances just were gradually, you know, even you could sense it in the last couple of games as well. You know, obviously the Sligo and Finn Harps, obviously the two most recent ones, the performances were just, you know, you could just see that the confidence maybe had like evaporated out of the players, and it's like they were afraid to lose, than rather than being confident that they were going to win. And you know, it just I know John Caulfield, he had plenty of pride and the passion, and what he's done for the club has been magnificent, and obviously in terms of motivating the players, but maybe it's just got to the stage now that the players, maybe the voice, they probably needed a fresh voice in the dressing room. And I suppose to John Caulfield's you know, in his case, you know, it's been a tough time maybe in terms of turnover of players. You know, it's obviously been much widely reported in terms of the budget cuts, and you can just see obviously the players that they left even towards the off season this year. I mean, Stephen Beattie, Johnny Dunleavy, you know, Kieran Sedley or Jimmy Keohane, you know, they're big players and they're big leaders, experienced players, and I suppose they haven't replaced the, they haven't brought in four or five players of the same, or they haven't been able to bring in players of that quality.
Yeah, I think we saw at the start of the season when those names were being released that it was going to be very difficult, but I don't think anybody predicted that Cork would be in a relegation scrap, so you can understand why the board had to do something about it. But let's look to the future now, and who do we expect to be in charge Cork's next match then?
You know, well, I suppose the club, I mean, obviously the statement they released this morning, they didn't make any clarification who would be in charge of Friday night. But obviously they did say that they will appoint an interim manager for the foreseeable future, and then obviously they'll begin a thorough recruitment process for a new first-team manager. But I'd imagine it'll probably be someone, obviously it could be someone internally within the club, maybe someone like, there's talks of it that John Cotter will take charge of the game Friday night. Now whether he'll be that interim manager for the foreseeable future remains to be seen, but I think obviously normally Coxie, they would kind of, like most League of Ireland clubs, on a Thursday afternoon they would probably send out press releases regarding team news, previews of a game, so I'd imagine maybe in the next 24 hours we should get a clear idea who would be in charge for the game against Bohemians on Friday.
And have we had any initial names being linked with the job, John?
There's been, I suppose the two that have come to the fore straight away are obviously two popular former players. One obviously a popular choice seems to be among supporters would be obviously Longford's boss Neil Finn. You know, in terms like everyone can see obviously the progress he's made at Longford, and he has them playing a very entertaining brand of football, and obviously like he has a very soft spot for Cork, and I think he played in probably a very very entertaining Cork City side with Pat Dolan back in the mid 2000s. The other probably name that would really, I know he's tied up at the moment obviously with the Irish under-17s and the Euros, would be Colin O'Brien. You know, he personally, I think obviously I think he would be a great choice, Colin O'Brien, because he would play football in entertaining the manner I think that would entertain Cork City supporters. You know, you could see the progress that he's making with the Irish under-8 sides and the way that he has them playing, and I think just the way he conducts himself, I think he would be a good communicator and a good vocal presence in the dressing room. Just the clarity and the way that he does speak. I mean, obviously going back 12 months, obviously to win they got knocked out the under-17 Euros last year in such kind of cruel circumstances against the Netherlands. You know, obviously with Jimmy Cochrane getting sent off for a second yellow for going off his line. You know, you would have understood most managers in that situation would have been effing and blinding. And I mean, and then 5 minutes after the game, obviously to having to do an interview wouldn't have been easy on the television. Obviously, Rocky's Tony O'Donoghue, but he thought he conducted himself a real class, and I think he would be a choice obviously in terms of in a footballing sense, stylistic sense. I think given what he's done as a player with Cork City, I think that would be a great bonus as well straight away. Though he would be a very popular choice. There's other than that, obviously there's some talks, obviously Greg Yelverton is another name that seems to be floating around. He's obviously the head of the soccer in UCC at the moment, and he would have the pro licence requirement if he was obviously to go to play with someone like Conn Healy, because he's obviously the Ireland University's manager as well, so it'll be interesting in a couple of weeks, that's for sure.
Well, John, look, what do you think the goal will be for the club for the rest of the season? Obviously, as you said, they're going to get an interim team in now and look long-term then to a new manager, but have the club given up hope of a top-four finish this season?
I think that's probably in line, they made the decision that they made, obviously. But yeah. John, I think, when you look at them on paper, like the squad that Crocs really have, like they're definitely capable of finishing in a better position than where they are at the moment, you know. And maybe it's just down to a loss of confidence. I mean, they do. I know there's been a lot of turnover players, and he's working with a younger squad, but there's still a good core of experienced players who've won League of Ireland, Premier Division winners medals, and FAI Cup trophies medals, obviously, with City that likes Garrow Morrissey, Carl Shepherd, Gary Buckley, Conor McCormack, Shane Griffin, Alan Bennett. Matt McNulty. You know, there's a good core of experienced players like that. They probably should be like they are capable of being in a better position than what they're in. But obviously, you're looking at the table now. It's a big ask at this stage even to see them overtake, try to finish it. Obviously, you see the front of Bowes and Derry are in, and then obviously you'd be hoping, you have to hope other teams would probably just have to fall off and they would go on a pretty brilliant run. But like, that's probably another tough aspect. If they don't make Europe as well this year, they'd be an even bigger, that they'd be a budget cut for next year as well. And long term, the next, it is going to be a real transitional period for Cork City in the next couple of years, you know.
Well, John, thanks very much for updating us on the situation down in Cork. Difficult day for Cork supporters after the success they've had in recent years, but let's hope this is a turning point for the rest of the season and going forward.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Ed.
Thanks for joining us. Cheers. So, John Breyer, we'll speak about the rest of our guests and what we have coming up on tonight's show shortly, but first I have to get your thoughts on the big news story today.
Yeah, well, to be honest, a little surprised because things seem to be okay down in Cork. I know the results weren't there, but there didn't seem to be any inclination that Caulfield was going to be dismissed. He was...
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet, no. And we were talking there to John, and he was saying he was racking up for the press conference in positive spirits about how it's going to be turned around. And the next thing we know today, it's all over.
Well, you often see these kind of things in football where you think a manager is going to hang on for another while and then out of nowhere the news comes and it's a surprise, but it's not a surprise. So all I can really ask you, John, is do you think it's the correct decision at the end of the day?
I do, yeah. And it's very difficult to say that because obviously he's done magnificently as a manager in Cork. He's been top two the last five seasons, FAI Cup finals and winners. But I think the writing was on the wall at the beginning of the season. To lose so many of his top players and to lose so much budget, he signed players that were unproven to the league. And it's not really worked for John. And I'm afraid the writing was on the wall after failing to beat Finn Harps.
Yeah, obviously we've been speaking throughout the day through text and the likes. And you feel that John Coffey's been a little bit hard done by the fact that there was such a significant budget cut this season.
Yeah, I think so, because 300,000 we're talking about. But to lose, I mean, the players we listed, the five or six would be of your...
We'll get into the, most league managers, yeah.
First names on the team sheet. So to have that stripped out of the team, it was a huge rebuilding job for John. And like I say, it's just been a little bit unfortunate that the signings just haven't worked.
Yeah, so to lose players of such quality and experience, as we heard from John there a few moments ago in our interview.
I mean, you think about how many goals Kieran Sadler scored last season for Cork.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was when you lose those players, it's difficult enough. But if you have a budget, maybe you can go and find players that can be some sort of replacement. But when you have such a massive budget cut and you're looking to sign younger players and players from outside the league, it really does make the challenge so much more difficult.
Yeah, and it's a huge risk, isn't it? And I think at the start of the season when we did our season preview, we were talking about Cork finishing out of the top four, but I don't think any of us could have expected them to be in the trouble that they're in this season.
Where do you see the club going from here in terms of appointments and the general direction for the rest of the season?
Well, I think we'll see a caretaker manager in pretty quickly. A couple of shouts there from John as to who that'll be. As for a more permanent signing as manager, there was talk there about Neil Fenn. My understanding is he's not got the coaching badges.
He hasn't got
currently
a pro license at the moment. He's
certainly
the name on Cork City supporters' lips for not just the last couple of days, even last season. I remember we had a lot of tweets in from Cork fans saying that they would love Neil Fenn at some stage to eventually manage Cork
City.
Just
whether or not, his situation might be good for Longford. And, if from what I've seen of Neil Fenn, he'll want to see this out till the end of the season and get Longford promoted.
I definitely get the impression off him that when he's dedicated to a project, he's probably going to stick with it.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll go anywhere this season, but we're talking purely speculation. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Does any other names spring to mind?
Not really. Who else was linked there, John? John was saying the...
Colin O'Brien,
yeah. That was a good shout, actually.
Yeah, it's a huge job, and you're replacing a man that's, had such a hugely successful time, won it all, really. you have to have a certain character to go in there now and follow. Maybe it's a little bit easier, the fact it's ended a little bit difficultly for John Caulfield. He hasn't gone out after doing a double, and you're not coming into that situation like at Dundalk we've seen with Vinnie Perth coming in replacing Stephen Kenny. I can't imagine a more difficult job than that, but yeah, in terms of the next most difficult job in the league, this is probably right up there. So
it's a tough ask for whoever comes in. I don't think Cork will go down, but they're certainly not going to finish top four here, and so it's a bit of a hiding to nothing whoever comes in.
I suppose a good example of that is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer coming in at Manchester United. They looked cut adrift from the top four very, very early on the season. Solskjaer comes in, they get that managerial bounce. Yeah. They go on a great winning streak. They're right in the mix of the top four. Now, it looks like they might miss out now, but if someone could come in and have that type of impact at Cork, it'd be amazing. But
it's just
the form they're in at the moment.
And the squad they've got, yeah, Kieran, yeah. You know, I struggle to see the turnaround. You know, Manchester United, who you're leaning about, they've a good squad. They will be capable of they'll be capable of beating a lot of teams if they had a good run against lower league sides. You know,
it'll be interesting. Final point on this: it'll be interesting to see what sort of reaction we get from the Cork players on Friday in Dalymount Park.
Yeah,
probably the most difficult venue you go to at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a great atmosphere and a tough one for the Cork team.
But look, we have a massive show coming up tonight, John. You've just heard from John O'Shea, local Cork journalist, on the huge breaking news, and I'm sure we'll touch on that situation throughout tonight's podcast. But elsewhere, we have a very, very special guest on tonight's show. Breffni Early is going to be joining us. If that name doesn't ring a bell, it should. Give this man a Google, because his story is absolutely incredible. Award-winning author. He cycled literally the entire world. And on top of all that, and most importantly, he is a massive League of Ireland supporter. So we've got him on to talk about a huge range of topics. It's probably not the sort of interview we'd normally go for, John, but we've just recorded it there, and it really is a superb listen.
It's a fantastic interview, and he's an inspiration to many people, as Breffni, from where he was in his life in 2010 to where he is now. So, you know, he's got a book, have a read of that, but it's a fantastic interview, so do stay tuned.
Yeah, and our final interview of the night, my Twitter has been hopping in the last couple of days when I announced this one. Keith Ward, the Bo's number 10, the little magician, he's going to join us.
Well, where will he be tonight? He was on his PlayStation, I think, last time we talked to him, wasn't he? We interrupted a game of FIFA.
Yeah. Going to be great. He's a great character, and as you've said on the show many times, when he's on form, he's one of the best number 10s, if not the best number 10 in the league. And Bo's, as I tweeted during the week, and it's blown up on my Twitter, at KieranBTS, any Bo's fans out there that aren't following me already, I said Bo's have been the story of this season so far. That win against Derry City, incredible.
Yeah, that was just a super result. And I remember you put that poll up, didn't you, as to whether or not Bo's can win the league. Be interesting to see where that will go now, Kieran.
Yeah, very true. And on top of all that, we're going to end the show by telling the folks about our trip to Bala, because we have some absolutely hilarious tales to tell.
Kieran, have you recovered?
My skin is purple from all the dark fruits, but we'll get on with it. Look, let's crack into it. All that to come, but we're going to start with the Premier Division reviews. Two sets of fixtures again to run through this week. As always, we'll start with the Friday fixtures. It was the game of the weekend. It was the result of the weekend. And it's been one of the statements of the season so far. Dundalk beating Shamrock Rovers to cut that gap to 4 points.
And I think the main story from the night was the toilets not in use at the away end, Kieran.
I think we talked about that. We could almost see that coming, couldn't we?
Yeah.
When we were on the way over to Wales, we were having a little chuckle about that. All right.
Maybe they'll get them open by the next fixture, Kieran.
Yeah, we'll wait and see.
Yeah. But anyway, certainly it wasn't all one way for Dundalk in this one. We expected this one to be pretty close, and so it was. Jack Byrne, he went for a trademark curling shot early on, but he shot that too close to the goalkeeper. Duffy had a great chance, but his control let him down early on. Goalmouth scramble after a great run by Gannon. Gannon played really well, actually.
Yeah, Gannon's been in form really in the last good, couple of weeks. Really big stuff.
But somehow that didn't end up in the net. But the goal did come eventually. It was coming, a bit of Dundalk pressure, and it came from a Duffy corner. And trademark, Pat Hooban header.
Yeah, and we've talked about Pat Hooban in the last couple of weeks, that he's been scoring a lot of penalties and he hasn't probably been in the form you'd like to see him in. And we said on last week's show that he just really needs a goal from open play now. And this was a trademark Patrick Hooban header, diving header into the bottom corner. And you can see the emotion and the celebration, what it meant to him. I think we're going to see Pat Hooban really hit form now in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and at this stage, Dundalk were running riot down that right wing, and Gannon in particular was having a field day down there, and a couple of great moves. The other side of half time, a pullback from Gannon, He was the provider to make it 2-0 for Duffy. That was a great goal, Kieran.
I love his finish, yeah. It gives the goalkeeper and all the defenders the eyes. It looks like he's going to curl it in towards the far post, and out of nowhere, he just drags it with his laces down into that bottom left-hand corner. And as you said, brilliant build-up play from Sean Gannon. Amazingly, he wasn't awarded the man of the match. I think it went to Sean Hoare, and the Dundalk supporters and their local reporters online were up in arms over it. Everyone agreed that the Gannon was by far the best player on the pitch.
There was almost a copycat goal as well, straight afterwards. Yeah. Gannon again pulled back, Duffy shot. Amazing save from Manus, I have to say. Got down really well that time. Consolation goal for Rovers from Vojic. Set up an exciting finish, but it wasn't to be. Dundalk held on 2-1.
And look, you've had your question marks over the Dundalk management team this season, but this is a huge statement of intent from Vinnie Perth. He's gone and got one over Stephen Bradley. They've closed that gap now. You could argue the momentum is with Dundalk now in this title race. It's on, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's most certainly on. Yeah. They're looking good again. I was very impressed with their performance there, and certainly the run they're on at the moment is good. It's taken a little while for it to get right in Dundalk. Mm. I was quite right to criticise it earlier on in the season, but it seems to be settling down now, and they're looking a good unit, Kieran.
Yeah, the only worry, obviously it happened in the game against Waterford on Monday, which we'll discuss later, but Jamie McGrath picking up an injury, hopefully not too serious, because they picked up a lot of injuries to midfield players early on in the season, and that certainly contributed to their slow start. But we're starting to see the likes of Gannon, the Duffys, the Hoobins, they're all starting to play. Shields is back in the side. It's coming together for Dundalk.
It's worrying times for the rest of the league when those names start clicking.
It's very exciting. We have a genuine title race now.
Yep.
And we'll discuss on the show whether it's a 2-horse or a 3-horse race. Let's go to our next fixture. Derry 2, Cork City 0. We were starting to see the writing on the walls here for John Caulfield at this stage, weren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was always going to be a tough ask to go to Derry and get any kind of result. Having said that, other teams have done that this season, as we're about to go on to. But, tough one. And we highlighted this man in the last podcast, and again he looked very lively this match. Junior, Kieran, impressed with him again.
Electric.
Yeah, he was brought down, and free kick was converted in by Towell to make it 1-0 early on for Derry. Cork did have the chances, cleared off the line after Cherry palmed a shot wide for a corner. McCormack, though. He ended the game, really, with a second yellow card. He gave away a penalty, got his second yellow card. But would you believe it? McNulty actually saved it.
And it was a fantastic save. It wasn't one of these penalties where you can say it's a poor one. He struck it really well. And it was a brilliant save from McNulty.
Yeah. Second came at the end. McDonough made up for the penalty miss to make it 2-0. And, tough journey back for Cork, all that distance.
Yeah. For Derry, though, keeping the momentum going. Obviously, they've had a setback, though, on Monday, and we'll touch on that now in a second. So what we'll do, we'll move on to our next fixture. Bowes 0, Waterford 0. Is it fair to say that Bowes probably felt the worst side coming out of this one, dropping 2 points?
Well, I just...
Or was it a fair result on the night?
I just thought, I think they made a couple too many changes. 8 changes Bowes made for this one, Kieran. Mm. Now, he's done this a couple of times this season.
He has to. Yeah. Especially with a trip to Derry on the Monday. He had to make changes, didn't he?
Yeah.
Or would your argument be go and win your home game and then go on the road with your second side? No, I don't think you can do that, because you could take a right pacing off Derry then and lose all your momentum.
Yeah, there's a few players to me looked a bit rusty. Ryan Swan in particular looked pretty rusty.
Well, you have to remember Swan's coming back from a very long-term injury.
Yeah. He headed over the bar early on. Talbot, he's been great all season. Yeah. He saved well from JJ Lunny, and then Akinadi as well, he made a great save from. Second half, Corcoran had a good chance, but he shot wide. To be fair, he was under quite a bit of pressure.
Seemed to be losing his balance as he
did. Not too much else to report from that. 0-0, Kieran.
Well, I suppose when you read it back like that, Talbot's made 2 really good saves in the first half, so maybe Waterford are the ones that felt like they left the points behind, but on balance of play, probably a fair result.
I think so, yeah.
Moving along, St. Pat's 2, UCD 0. UCD disappointed with this one.
Oh, did you know they were very disappointing full stop this game, Kieran?
They're just on a little bit of a slide at the moment, aren't they?
But to me, they just didn't offer enough in this match. They offered very, very little, they just never really got going this game, I don't think. And, it was a disappointing performance for them, and I'm starting to worry a little bit.
Pats, though, starting to click there?
Well, definitely. In Birmingham, he should have scored point-blank range, but Conor Kearns saved early on, and then he saved from Drennan after a lovely dinked ball over the top, Kieran.
Yeah, Cairns has had a really good start to the season. Very good shot stopper. Looks good with his feet as well. Liable to the odd mistake here and there, but you have to remember he's still a very young goalkeeper, and playing week in, week out on this stage in the top flight, it can only be good for his development.
Yeah, UCD, as I said, offered very little. They had a shot block, but to be honest, that was all the disappointing students offered. Kieran Kelly broke the deadlock to make it 1-0, and Michael Drennan got the second after the goalkeeper could only parry an effort, so that was 2-0.
Yeah, good to see Kelly come into the side. Was ultra impressive for Drogheda last season in the First Division. He's had to bide his time, and he's come in and he's made an impact.
One thing that this is starting to show to me is the gap between the two divisions, Kieran, because the two teams that have come up struggling at the moment, and it's, to me, it's highlighting that there is a big gap to cover when you do get promoted.
Okay, moving along, Sligo 1, Harps 1.
Yeah, a local derby this one. McAleer with an early chance, but he volleyed over. Harps really struggling to get somebody that can put the ball in the net, I'm afraid. And it's although it's a point at Sligo, it's only a point, you know, and they can't keep getting the odd point here and there and expect to survive the division. But at the other end, Coughlin, he blazed one over at the other end. That was a bad miss. I don't think he's really hit his top form, has he?
Yeah, he just needs a goal, doesn't he?
Yeah, and Ronan Murray again. Again, two strikers that do look a bit rusty.
Definitely,
Yeah, he shot wide. Bad miss. And it was Sean Boyd, though, in the score. I have to say, poor defending by Sligo.
Yeah, the man on loan from Shamrock Rovers.
Romeo Park scored, but he was adjudged offside. And then Harps had a great chance to make it 2-0, but McAleer didn't have his shooting boots on, and he hit his shot directly at Beanie. You thought that was it, 1-0. They were trying to edge, you know, injury time, but what was going through Daniel O'Reilly's mind? He pushed Coughlin in the last minute.
He didn't need to do it, John.
Absolutely not. And crazy defending, and they're on the verge of the win, and he goes and does that.
I think that's just desperation. I think they're so desperate for a win, Harps. O'Reilly sees the player about to get a shot away on goal, although I think it would have been blocked, or someone would have got across, or maybe the keeper would have saved it. I don't think it was going in. And O'Reilly, he's just panicked. He's desperate for the 3 points, desperate to get a tackle in, but he pushes his man in the back, gives away a cheap penalty. And
second yellow card as well, red card, suspension.
It's costly now, especially with this huge game coming up for Harps now against UCD.
Ronan Coughlin scores the penalty, and then Ollie's going crazy at the final whistle.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about, because it was a blatant penalty. Harps, though, should have had this game killed off. That chance you mentioned when McAleer broke away, could have made it 2-0, hits it straight at the goalkeeper. He scores that, it's curtains, and it's a huge win, and they're up and running. And then they're going into this game against UCD with momentum. But now they're going into this game against UCD, and all the pressure is on Harps to win. A point will happily do Colly O'Neill and UCD. Harps don't win this game, it's a long way back.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll go only briefly through the Monday fixtures. Night fixtures, because we've got such a massive show this week, and we're going to be 1.5 hours if we even go through them all. So we'll just give you the results, the goal scorers. Waterford, disappointing Waterford, completely outgunned, outclassed by Dundalk, 3-0, Kieran.
Another masterclass from Michael Duffy. I said it to you on last week's show, when he gets in this type of form, he can be unplayable, and in the last couple of games, that's what he's been.
Yeah, Flores as well with a goal.
A screamer, absolute rocket.
Bad news for Waterford. Bastian here, he sent off for 2 yellow cards. He'll have a suspension, and you know, their season's not been what they expected, has it so far?
He's the real creative spark in that team, so you've got to worry for them now in the next couple of games.
Rovers beat Pats 1-0. Ronan Finn with the winner with that one.
Yeah, and for me, Finn has been much, much improved this season on last season. He looks like the type of player he was when we seen him first come into the league. Really physical and powerful, making those driving runs and opening up midfields, and This was a scrappy game. I watched this one live, and it wasn't a classic by any means, but Rovers digging out a very important 1-0 win.
Yeah, perhaps a bit disappointed with that on the form that they're in. Derry 0, Bohemians 2. We'll come to in a minute. Sorry, I've gone out of order, Kieran. Cork 1, Harps 1. Kevin O'Connor for Cork, and Keith Cowan with the equaliser.
Yeah, a story of set pieces in this one. O'Connor with a beautiful, what's become a trademark free kick for him, right into the top corner to give Cork the lead. But Finn Harps equalising with a beautifully worked set piece move. Definitely a better result for Finn Harps to be a part-time side to go down to Cork after being away to Sligo and pick up points in both games. It's very impressive, and it sets them up nicely for this game against UCD now. As for Cork, a very, very sour way, I'd say, probably for John Caulfield to end his reign, dropping points at home to Finn Harps, but we've probably touched on that enough on tonight's show. UCD 0, Sligo Rovers 2. Sligo, good value for the win. Another very poor performance from UCD.
Regan Donnelly and your favourite defender, Dante Leverock, on the score sheet.
He's got a little run together now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's doing well. And that match that came to a bit prematurely. Derry 0, Bowes 2. Well, I certainly didn't see that coming, Kieran. No. And fantastic result for Bowes, who just keep going on and on.
Then again, when either of us tip... Bows to lose, they always win, so the Bows fans are begging us to keep that up. But look, what a result. That was the result of the Monday games, to go up to the Brandywell and win 2-0, and they thoroughly deserved it as well. And it throws them right into the mix now, at the top of the table.
Mandrio and Denny Corcoran scoring, and I believe we have somebody on the line we're going to talk to about this.
Yeah, absolutely delighted once again to welcome Keith Ward back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. So, folks, I'm delighted to say Keith Ward, the Bows number 10, joins us on the line now. Keith, you're welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, John, we better mention we've had to disrupt all our preparation and come in early to do this interview with Wardy. He's off to Nando's.
Yeah, I am indeed. We're off on a Wednesday, so I thought I'd treat myself before the match and get a Nando's.
Yeah, well, do you know what, Kieran? That's a good healthy dinner. It's not like we were at the weekend. So good man, Keith.
It's a double day, is it?
Sorry. It's a double day. It is. Stevie O'Donnell's coming with me, so we'll be just talking football as usual.
Very good. Pass our regards on to Stephen, obviously.
I will.
Friend of the podcast. Anyway, Keith, we better talk about Bows. We have a lot of Bows listeners to this show, and they're very excited to hear from you tonight. I suppose we have to throw the big question at you first. Bows, genuine title contenders?
I don't know. I think it's too early to be talking like that. I think... Look, since the season started, it's going great, and hopefully low may continue, but it's just going well. It's a good start to the season, but that's all it is, and there's too many hard games in this league to be getting ahead of ourselves, and obviously we're enjoying the run, you know. The buzz since the start of the season has been good, and the team with how we've been doing, but we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. We're not allowed, and we're not good enough. We're not a good enough team to get ahead of ourselves. So we just got to keep doing what we're doing. We've been working hard, and you know, grinding out a lot of results, a lot of clean sheets, a lot of 1-0s. I don't think we've walked away with any wins this season. You even look at our game against Rovers when they went down to 9 men. It was still a hard game at 1-0, and it's going well at the moment. But that's all it is. It's just a good start.
Yeah, it's been a great start, and I think Bows have probably been the story of the season so far. What do you think the difference is this year to last year? Is it the young players that have come in?
To be fair, last year we felt like we were playing a lot better in games and not picking up results, and some games this year I think we've played poor and grinded out results, so it's hard last year where I thought we, like, sometimes you're coming off the pitch scratching your head saying, we could have done, like, there's not a lot more we could do, only put the ball in the net. But I think this year, maybe we've been a bit more solid. Obviously, with the clean sheets, it's great. You look at our record, conceding, I think it's 4 goals in 14 games. You know, it's frightening when you look at it like that, 11 clean sheets. But maybe a lot of games in this league, I think if you get the first goal in this league, you give yourself a great chance, because there's not a lot in it with teams this year. There's no easy games, and I just think maybe that's all it is this year. We've got ourselves in the lead a lot of games, and we don't find ourselves chasing a goal down.
And obviously you're one of the veterans in that side now. You've been out with the team recently with injury and had to settle for a place on the bench. Do you feel you're getting back to full fitness now?
Yeah, look, it was just kind of me groin, it was just kind of niggling at me, and I had to sit out a game. And to be fair, Dan and Andrew came in. He's come in the hole. He's been great since he's come in. You know, he's unbelievable talent. To be fair, look, I was back in the team. The gaffer made changes on Friday, and I came in against Waterford. So I didn't do enough. I was poor. Obviously, you know, it was nil all game against Waterford. But I had a poor game, and you know, Keith made changes again on Monday, and Daniel came in and scored. And to be fair, that's the way it's been, and that's the way it is with Keith. That, you know, if you're not at it, you give someone else a chance, and if that lad comes in and does well, he'll play. And like, that's the way it is, and that's why I think he does so well. And with the squad we have, that anyone can come in and do well, and if you do well, you'll stay in the team. And look, Daniel's doing great, and hopefully, you know, we can keep doing well for the team. And I'll obviously just try to do my best, and if I get a chance, I'll hopefully I can get myself back in the team.
And that's been one of the things about Bowes this season, even with the part-time squad, Keith's not being afraid to rotate the squad. You know, he's making 7 changes, 8 changes here or there. It's quite amazing that you are where you are when you think he's able to do that.
Yeah, and look, it's brave. It is brave from Keith. You know, he shows his trust in the young lads or anyone that's coming into the team. And maybe other managers wouldn't do that or wouldn't have the trust, but Keith does. And the way we train, and it's a competitive squad, like I said, I think we've 2 players for every position. You know, when you look at players around the team or around the league that are squads that maybe if 1 or 2 players you take out of a team, they'd miss. But I think we've 22 players that can come into the team and do the same job as anyone else. So it's just a good, young, competitive squad we have with, you know, a few good older lads like Dini and Detzer and even Bucco and Rob Cornwall, Aaron Barry, like not even old lads, but have been in the league a few years. And you know, it's great having young lads coming through. It's good for the fans to see all these young lads. And they've all been great, to be fair. All the young lads that have come in this year, the likes of Conor Levinson, who's come into the middle, James Talbot, James Finnerty, Dan O'Mandreou. So, yeah, it's just going well at the moment with the way it is.
And obviously, big news out of Cork today, Keith, and they're your opponents next. Is there any fear there could be this new manager effect, a bit of a bounce from Cork?
Yeah, always see it when a manager comes in. Players obviously, you know, teams obviously seem to do well. It's just the way it is. I don't know what's happened this year with Cork. Obviously, you know, they've lost a few lads, but they're still a great squad. They've still some serious players there. So, look, I have been surprised to see where they are at the moment. But, yeah, we'll just have to see what happens during the week, whether a new manager comes in time or someone might step in. But if it changes nothing for us, we'll still prepare right. And, you know, we're obviously going to get a tough game against Cork, but we just have to obviously look after ourselves and prepare like we would any game.
Yeah, and finally, obviously that game is at Daly Mount Park, and I'd imagine the main stand's going to be sold out once again. It's been terrific to see the attendances at Daly Mount this season. Is that buzz having a real effect and helping push you lads on in games?
Yeah, absolutely. You can see the support we've been getting. You know, you'd love if there was more seats in Daly Mount where you could actually get it too, if you could make more the capacity bigger, obviously. But no, it is. You see it coming out to a packed stand every week. You know, it makes you don't want to let them down, and you want to keep seeing that. And that's up to us. It's not up to the club. It's not up to the fans. It's up to us to put the fans on the seats. And I think there is a good relationship between the fans and the players at the moment. They can see we're a good, honest, young, working hard team that are going out there and enjoy playing for the club, and we enjoy playing for each other. So yeah, I think it is. The club's in a good place, obviously, at the moment with the way the league's going and the fans are coming in. And it's good even around the league. You look at the crowd we got against Rovers, the crowd Rovers brought, and you can see most teams this year, I think all their attendances are up. So hopefully, you know, we can continue and keep progressing.
Well, Keith, been a pleasure having you on. We'll let you go and enjoy your Nando's.
Cheers, bud.
Take it easy on the old peri-peri. It's not great for the heartburn.
I will. Thanks for having me on.
Man, thanks a million.
Chat soon.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
To the first division results, John, we'll start at the Carlisle grounds. Bray 1, Cabinteely 1. Very interesting result there.
Well, top half of the table clash here, and Cabinteely's good performances continue as they get a draw at Bray. Jake Ellis with the goal for Bray, Laboutis for Cabinteely.
Yeah, so good to see goals been spread around that Cabinteely side, and no real reliance on one player, because Rob Manley's definitely been the man that they've looked to in recent weeks. So good to see someone else chipping in away from home in a big game. But you'll remember a couple of weeks ago, John, I wrote Bray out with the title race because their performance in Longford. I just thought in such a big game like that, for a team to perform so poorly, that you can't consider them title contenders. And when you look at the games Bray have slipped up in this year, they were terrible against Longford. They were poor in defeat at Talca Park against Shells, who would be considered another title rival, and they've dropped points here at home to Cabinteely. For me, Bray can't do it in the big games at the moment. They're not going to be anywhere near the title.
Well, they bounced back against Drogheda last week, didn't they? 3-0 with that McGlade hat-trick.
Drogheda haven't shown enough to be considered promotion contenders at the moment.
Four goals away to Cove?
Cove haven't set the world
alight. Wanford didn't do that, did they?
No, they didn't, but they've been consistent. Drogheda have been inconsistent. What I'm getting at here is Bray in the big games against the sides that are looking like going to be their main rivals for promotion. They've not done it this season. No. So for me, I don't see Bray as genuine challengers this year.
One team that is really stepping it up and starting to show what we thought they would do at the beginning of the season is Shells. And they beat Galway 3-0.
A couple of red cards up.
Well,
in the big part
they were helped by a couple of red cards. Yeah, Costello and Stephen Walsh sent off for Galway. The two Brennans with the goals, Ryan Brennan, Oscar Brennan, and Kilduff in between.
Yeah, a star-studded goal scoring list there, you have to say. We're seeing an awful lot of red cards in the first division this year.
Yeah, well,
do you put that down to anything in particular? The referees refereeing the games in a certain way, or is it just ill discipline from sides?
There's a bit about refereeing standards, and I think there's some poor players, to be honest, some teams who are, you know, with rash tackles and badly timed tackles.
Yeah,
and
that's a fair point, probably.
Yeah, yep. Wexford, as I predicted, 2-0 against Athlone. The bubble has certainly burst at Athlone. Furlong and Jack Doherty for Wexford. That's a big result for them.
They're two players that are chipping in with plenty of goals, and it's been a decent start actually for Wexford. We were writing them off and wondering were they going to get a win at all, but they've picked up a couple of wins now. They've improved their performances in recent weeks. Frat Lone, you've said it there perfectly, you've summed it up brilliantly. The bubble has burst. They're going in one direction now, and unfortunately it's downwards.
Yeah, I got a bit of stick on Twitter, I think, early on in the season when I said that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's all going wrong there, Kieran.
Yeah, just from a Wexford point of view, hopefully they can keep up some sort of consistency. Obviously, you're not expecting these sort of results every week. But if they can pick up points at home and against the teams around them and then put in competitive performances against the bigger sides, you'd be more than happy as a Wexford fan. Frat Lone, they certainly need to find some type of difference now in the next few weeks to try and alter these results because they're on a downward slide.
Do you know what I'm happy about the first division this year? There's no whipping boys,
no,
Kieran.
No.
Everybody has the opportunity. You know, everybody can beat anybody on the day, which is good.
We've seen one very bad scoreline. Cove, I think, was 6-1 against Wexford, wasn't it? But bar that, it's been competitive the whole way through. We're not seeing the ridiculous scorelines that we've seen in past years. That's really, really good.
Yeah. Cove took a bit of a mauling by Drogheda at home here, and that's a tricky place to go and get the 3 points, Kieran. But Mark Doyle with a brace for Drogheda.
Yeah, another player that's starting to chip in now quite consistently for the Drogs, so that's good.
Yeah, and like you were pretty critical of them earlier, they needed a result like that, and that's certainly, if you were thinking that they weren't going to be involved at the top this season, that's maybe telling you otherwise.
Yeah, well, this game against Longford on Friday will certainly that'll show their credentials, because as you said, that's a great result on the road, gives them nice momentum now. If they can follow that up, then yeah, they can definitely go on a run, but they have to go and do it. That's the big thing, isn't it?
Not a classic though at Longford. 1-0.
Just to go back to Cove there, yep. Their manager Stephen Henderson tweeted after this. He said simply, not good enough, and the players now have to go and show that they are good enough to be here, because he's going to bring the players in, he said, in the transfer window that will be better than this. So he's laid down the challenge to his players in the next couple of weeks to prove you're good enough to be a Cove or you're gone. So I like that from a manager, because we don't see that a lot in the modern game. Managers they're very gentle around their players. They don't want to upset them. Don't want to upset the dressing room, but he's laid down the marker here. I like that. Let's see how they react in the next few weeks.
Well done, Hendo. Don't accept mediocrity and, you know, being mid-table, lower table also runs.
They're getting it hard enough to get people in the gate at home. Results like this won't help. So it's good to see the manager taking that type of approach.
Yeah, and as I was saying, not a classic at Longford. 1-0 against Limerick. Dean Burney needed that goal. That's good news. Red card for Limerick. Wasn't a classic, Kieran.
No, a couple of interesting points to make on this game. Dean Byrne, as you said, with a goal, but I think you're underselling it. It was an absolute screamer. And we've said it multiple times on the show in the last season and a half. He is the X factor in this Longford side. When they're looking for something in a tight game like this, he's the player to go and get it. Have you watched the highlights back on this game?
I have, yeah.
I have to get your thoughts on the red card. And there was you've mentioned the fact that Limerick, you forgot to mention the fact Limerick missed a penalty.
Yeah.
Stacey with a save.
Yeah.
And there was a 2-footed lunge as well on Carlton. It was only a yellow card, looked like it could have been red. So there was some big, big decisions for the referee to make. We'll start with that red card from McSweeney. What was your thoughts on it?
I thought it was a red.
Really?
Yeah, did you?
No.
No?
Initially, I did. Going to hold my hands up. Gone back, looked at it, and he's taken the ball. The way he's gone in, it probably looks worse than it is. I think the angle the referee views at is probably what's done McSweeney there.
Yeah.
But as I said, there was a tackle a few minutes later on Carlton. Two-footed lunge from me. Yellow card came out. Again, it was a case where he did win the ball, but he's gone in off the ground, so yeah, he's left himself open to it. It's probably balanced out in a way. But for Limerick to have them decisions go against him and miss a penalty, Tommy Barrett's got to feel extremely unlucky coming away from Longford.
Yeah, on the end of a tough week as well for Limerick, yeah.
Yeah. Stacey, though, in goals for Longford, penalty save, he's been fantastic, hasn't he?
Yeah, denied Jack Brady at the end as well.
Yeah. Brady going up for a last Gaff's set piece, and the ball broke the Jack Brady, the Limerick goalie. He was about to draw his boot on it, and Stacey comes out and gathers it. So not something you see every day.
What an amazing record. Longford yet to concede a goal at home this season.
Yeah, and they've broken the club record now, their best start ever to a season. So it's going well, but you know football, John, only takes one result to unbalance things. So big couple of weeks coming up for Longford, but certainly a dream start for them.
Title contenders?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Genuine, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Right, where are we going next, John?
I'm very excited about this interview,
as we said at the start of the show. Brett Finnerly is going to join us now. He was at that Longford Limerick game, so that's kind of why we're linking him in here. But I'm not going to give any more intro. I think what we said at the start of the show sums it up perfectly. Just put your headsets in, sit back, relax, and enjoy this. This is a really, really special interview.
Now, we've got a very special interview coming up, and we're delighted to get him on. We're going to talk League of Ireland and Limerick later I was preparing this interview, and it could take up the whole show, Kieran.
Yeah.
Absolutely delighted to get Breffni early. Absolute inspiration to many. And, welcome to the show, Breffni.
Thank you. I'm not sure about the introduction, but thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. Well, we were delighted to get you on. Well, we're going to take you back to 2010 first, and I think you wrote yourself, you were at your lowest ebb. Talk us through it.
Yeah, so I suppose it's nothing really to do with football, but I was just in a really, really bad place in my life. I was unhappy in work, unhappy in virtually every aspect of my life, and one Sunday afternoon, everything just came to a head, and I just decided, you know what, this isn't for me, and I decided the world would be a better place without me. And I made the decision that afternoon to take my own life. But before I had a chance to actually do anything about that, literally within 30 seconds or a minute of me kind of making the decision, my phone beeped on the other side of the room, and I picked up my phone, and there was a text message from my uncle inviting me to a memorial service for my cousin who had passed away from leukemia maybe 20 years earlier. And it just got me thinking about my family, about my cousin, my aunt and uncle, my parents, my sisters, and I just knew I couldn't put that 20 years of hurt plus the rest onto my parents, who were both like either just in their 70s or kind of getting to that thereabouts. And I just thought, no, I can't do this. So I decided I couldn't take my own life, but I didn't really know what else to do. And I sat, and the television was on in the corner, and I sat and I watched a movie that was just starting called The Bucket List. And I thought, you know what, it's a bit twee, and it's a bit, I suppose, what's the word, kind of Hollywood. But I just thought, here's a bit of an inspiration for me. And I sat down and I wrote my own bucket list of 10 things I wanted to do. And on my cousin's 20th anniversary, which is the 10th of the 10th, 2010, I gave myself a list of 10 things to do in the space of just over a year, between 10, 10, 10 and 11, 11, 11. And it was kind of really simple stuff in isolation, but when you put it all together, it was to lose 5 stone and get myself back fit and exercise and run a marathon and learn to swim, do a triathlon, cycle around New Zealand, go on a blind date every week, apply for 10 dream jobs, travel to 10 new countries, save 10% of my salary. Probably the hardest part of the whole thing, obviously, was saving the money when you're trying to go on holidays and go on dates every week and train and enter races and stuff. But no, it was fantastic. And by the end of the year, I did absolutely everything that was on the list and had the most amazing year of my life and completely turned my life around. It was fantastic.
And you mentioned cycling New Zealand there. You went a bit further, Breffni.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I mentioned triathlons and learning to swim. And every time I did one, I loved it. The experience getting to the finish line was absolutely amazing. But I was always carrying too much weight, so the running never really agreed with me. I always wanted to be a sports person, but was never quite there or thereabouts with the effort levels required to get me to the levels I wanted. I was never quite good enough anyway. That's another story. But the swimming scared the hell out of me. Every time I got in a pool or in a river, I felt like I was going to drown.
before I got out safely, and it was just horrible. The running I didn't really enjoy, but I loved the cycling. I used to pass people on the cycling, and it was just great. So I decided I'd go and try and find something a bit longer than maybe a sprint triathlon cycle rut leg, and I Googled really long bike events, and I found an event called the World Cycle Race. And it's exactly what it says on the tin, 30,000 kilometers around the entire planet. And on the 1st of March 2014, I set off to try and get around the world.
And I read you know, I mean, it's an amazing thing to do, but it wasn't without difficulties. You were robbed and cycles breaking down. Were there any points where you thought, oh, I'm giving this up?
Seconds, this isn't worth it. But there was one point where I really almost made the decision, and I think once I got survived that, I knew I wasn't going to quit. And that would have been about 6 or 8 weeks in India. And at this stage, everybody else in the race, there wasn't a huge entry list anyway, but everybody else in the race at this point had either got injured, had run out of money, had visa issues, had been disqualified, broken the rules. And I was the only person left, so I knew all I had to do was finish. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm the last person standing. If I quit now, I'll always be that last person standing, and I outlasted everybody else. It's as good as winning. But I also knew if I went back in 20 years' time, people would still be slagging me as that guy who was going to cycle around the world and got as far as India. Not that unimpressive in its own right, but just for whatever reason, India... the heat was unbearable. It was mid-April. It was probably 45 degrees most of the day, touching maybe 45, 50 degrees. And I had given myself 3 days to get between Mangalore and Bangalore, which is from the west coast of India, up into the foothills, up onto the Deccan Plateau, about 1,300 meters above sea level. And the bulk of that climbing was in one day, over about 100 kilometers. So if you can imagine maybe cycling from where you are in Longford, probably to Sligo or past it, but thrown in Knocknarea and maybe 4 or 5 times in the process. It's not exactly something you do without really thinking about it. Now I add 45 degree heat into the equation, and I found myself, I got up nice and early before daybreak so I wouldn't be in the sun, but didn't realize there was nowhere to eat, nowhere to drink, nowhere to get rest or shelter anywhere at any stage up along through the mountains. And I found myself at noon with no water, no food, no energy left, and I was reduced to just pushing the bike up the hill. And the only thing that was going through my mind was, if you turn the bike around, it was a free wheel the whole way back down for about 40 kilometers, 50 kilometers that I'd done so far. And I could just free wheel the whole way back down to a nice bed, meal, drink, and just forget about it. I come back the next day. Or do you know what? In the back of my mind, I was always thinking, I mightn't even come back the next day because I've got further than everybody else, and I can always say I did that. And a car pulled in, and a guy got out and walked back to me, and he said, "You look like you need help." And I said, "Yeah, I need food and water." And he said, "Well, hop in and I'll bring you to the next town." But I had to refuse because he couldn't do that or I'd be disqualified out of the race. And he went to his car and he came back with a liter bottle of water and little bits of biscuits and snacks and salty and sugary stuff, and I just devoured it all. And he sat and chatted for 5 or 10 minutes before I got back on the bike and kept going. Now, I had done about 30, 35 kilometres that morning, and as I got back on the bike and pushed it, and I was just about able to get back on the bike, I turned the first corner and there was a little shop, a little restaurant on the right-hand side of the road. And I was about to pack in the whole thing for the sake of about 1% more effort. And I always go back to that 1% of, you never quite know how close you are to achieving whatever your goal is. And for me, for the sake of 1% more, I nearly threw in the towel. And so once I got through that day and got through that experience, I kind of realized that I was going to make it around the world. So cycling up the steepest street in the world in Dunedin, New Zealand, or crossing the Rocky Mountains, or 2 weeks cycling across the desert in the middle of Australia, you kind of just get on with it. You know you can beat it. So once you've kind of done it once on one scale, you just transfer that kind of knowledge across. So yeah, I never really thought about seriously quitting from that point on.
Oh, that's amazing. And I have to ask you, what did you get for winning?
Yeah, this is a bone of contention with my mother. I got a letter of congratulations.
No way.
Yeah, well, I loved it. It was written in kind of old English style, you know, Phileas Fogg, welcome, well done, congratulations. It didn't matter what I got, though, whether it was a trophy or a medal or a pat on the back, it really didn't matter. It was about the people I met on the road, the lessons I learned on the road, the experiences. I had so many amazing life lessons, and the goodness of people from everywhere was phenomenal. Like, you've Indian people who can't afford to feed themselves insisting on feeding you, or Malaysians coming out to cycle with you, or having a bike race with a kid in India for maybe 3 or 4 kilometers along the road, where he wants to go fast because he sees you as somebody he's never seen before. You know, a slightly overweight Irish white guy wearing what they think is an Indian flag because it's more or less the same in terms of the green, white, and gold. And yeah, I had some amazing experiences. It was phenomenal. I'd recommend it to anybody. It was great.
And John, I have to say, I hope the FEI aren't listening, because they might get ideas and start sending out letters of congratulations when Dundalk or Shamrock Rovers win the league this season.
Well, the entry fee was free as well, to be fair.
Oh, well, there we go.
That's great. But what a fantastic achievement. But we may as well move on to... we should give your book a plug. Give you a chance to give the book a plug, because you can read all about it in that.
Yeah, so obviously came home, and how I funded the trip was by pre-selling copies of the book. So you can imagine if one of your slightly overweight, unfit friends came to you and said, I'm going to cycle around the world and then I'm going to write a book about it. Can I have 20 or 25 euros towards it now and I'll give you the book in 3 or 4 years? you'd kind of laugh at them, but by some miracle, 600 or 700 or 800 people actually said, you know what, actually we like this idea, we'll get behind it. And I raised about 20,000 euros, put about 20,000 of my own to it, and that basically paid everything for about it got all the equipment, all my accommodation that I needed, all my flights, everything, for about a year and a half. And the book came out in, I think, late 2016, but it's been great. It's called Pedal the Planet, and I suppose, just to give a little bit of a plug, people can get it on my website. If they just Google Pedal the Planet, they'll find it on Amazon or all good bookshops, and some really, really bad ones as well. It's been kind of a turning point for me. I haven't had what my mother would call a job in about 8 years, so I just kind of I talk in schools and companies about mental health and kind of creating a better outlook for yourself, and that's what I do as a day job. It's great.
Brilliant. So we should, one thing that didn't last as long as your cycle was your tenure as general manager at Limerick this year.
That's fair. That's very fair to say. I have to concede that. Now, to be fair, I have to, in full disclosure, you asked me to come on this before the news broke over the weekend about the new appointment down there, or the potential new appointment down there. So we kind of fell into that. But no, I had a very, very short stay in Limerick. It lasted a matter of days. It was probably even shorter than publicly people were aware it was. The long and the short of it was I was part of a group that was looking to buy the club, and we had been discussing it with the club for a long, long time, a couple of months maybe, from about a week or two after the relegation to the point at which we left. And we were, I think anyone who's looking in from the outside can pretty much see for themselves what went on, reading between the lines. It's not, it doesn't really need me to say anything or put the foot into anybody. That's not what I'm about. But it's just unfortunate. We had plans for what to do with Limerick in terms of where we saw it going, really developing a club for the community, to serve the community, for the community, by the community. And unfortunately, we just didn't feel it was a viable discussion. After a couple of days down there, we just didn't have trust that the deal would get across the line, and we decided to walk away. And I suppose we were proved kind of right in our decision in terms of what's happened over the last 10 days. So it's very unfortunate for the club, and it's very sad for the players and for Tommy and some really, really good people. Even though I was only there for a short time, I met a lot of people in terms of the direction we wanted to take the club, and I was very happy with where we were headed, but it just wasn't going to happen, and we made that decision really early on to step away.
And Breffni, we were speaking off air just before we started recording, and you were telling us you've been to nearly 40 games already this season. Now, they're not all League of Ireland, but the vast majority of them are, including underage games. It's quite an impressive stat. Where did the love for the league come from?
Well, as a kid, I suppose I grew up in the Italian 90 era, So I remember going to games in the showgrounds around the early 90s with my dad down to watch, like, the big glamour friendlies that used to happen back then. My first game I remember was going to see Tottenham Hotspur in town, and Gary Lineker and Gazza and Gary Mabbott and Chris Waddle and all these guys were playing with Tottenham, and it was just, they were class. And I think they beat, they won 4-0 or 4-1, I think, back in the day. And I remember being on the terraces as a young first-year student, kind of going to Sligo Rovers games through the cup run in '94 and the first division title, and that doesn't, you don't lose that, you know, you get that kind of an attraction to a club. And then I found myself in university a couple of years later, because I'm from Leitrim, so League of Ireland was never particularly strong. I just had a big interest in soccer, and I went to college in DCU, and for whatever reason there was a promotion on a League of Ireland game with Sligo Rovers coming to play Dublin City. And I went to the game more so because of Sligo Rovers than Dublin City, but I just kind of fell into the group there. It was a really nice group. One of my coach at the time was also a coach with the club, and he just got me involved doing bits and pieces on their website. And the rest, as they say, is history. I ended up doing websites for UCD, Dublin City, Limerick, as it was then, Kilkenny, St. Pat's for a brief period, maybe for 6 or 12 months at one stage back in the Pat Dolan era. And that's what I was doing through college, was web design, and it got me in, and I still do elements of the UCD website. The Super League stuff is all done by me behind the scenes, and it's I've always had a kind of an interest in the League of Ireland. I suppose when Dublin City went under, I would have considered myself more or less a fan there. I was working for them, and I was badly burnt by it as well, both financially as well as emotionally. And I just thought, I took a break for a few years and got into coaching, coached a couple of girls' teams over the years, and enjoyed that. And it was only really last year, the year before, when I got asked to come back and get involved with Sligo on the women's side of things, where we set up a women's under-17 team. And that was, I really enjoyed that, and that led to being involved with the main club. And then that kind of died off as I went to Limerick, which obviously didn't work out. So, but it's been great, yeah. And the number of games, I just enjoy going to games on a Friday and Saturday night. And lucky enough that I'm within distance of going to Longford, Sligo, Athlone, and then the odd occasional trip to Dublin as well is kind of nice, as well as a few away games. But I think, 40 games including pre-season, which considering most teams have only played 14 or 15 is kind of amazing in some respects.
Yeah, well, I have to say, myself and John, we always recognise your name popping up. A lot of retweets and likes for Between the Stripes. So you're obviously a very passionate fan of the league and a follower of ourselves. So, Breffany, thanks very much for joining us. Absolutely incredible story. We could keep you on the line all day, but we'll end it there. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much. See ya. Bye.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit Diaga.ie.
So to the St. Mel's Brewing Prediction Game, as always, our St. Mel's Brewing Prediction Game is sponsored by stmelsbrewing.com. Make sure you check out their website and look out for their fine craft beers brewed here in lovely Longford in all good off licences. John, no separating us last week, so it remains 7-4 to you so far this season in the battle for the mixed crate of beer. And on that point as well, a final reminder that our competition closes, we're going to extend it to tomorrow. So our competition is closing tomorrow for your chance to win a mixed crate of St. Mel's beer. All you have to do is leave, subscribe to Between the Stripes, LOI Podcast on iTunes, and leave a review. Simple as that. You're in the hat. And we'll announce a winner tomorrow.
It's free beer.
We've had enough over the weekend, so yeah, we can exclude ourselves from this.
I'm detoxing now.
Yeah. Let's go straight to the First Division. Galway against Wexford.
Okay, well, this is not as easy as it looks, Kieran, because Wexford are on a bit of a bounce back. Galway are having a tough time, but Galway. That's a real tough one to call.
The Danny Furlong derby, this one, huh?
Yeah.
As you said, Galway are in a real bad way at the moment. Wexford have picked up that little bit of form.
But they're still Wexford.
That's harsh.
Yeah. Have a look at the goal difference.
I'm usually the one hammering out the harsh stuff to Wexford. I think with the home advantage, I know they've had an awful time of it so far this season, but they have to get home with eventually. I think this is the one I'm going to go with. A Galway win in what could be a high scoring game, I feel, because the defence is not exactly the best for either side so far this season.
Okie doke. Athlone host Cove, Kieran.
As I mentioned, Hendo laying down the gauntlet to his players. He wants a reaction. Athlone, very, very poor form at the moment, going for a Cove win.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Cove as well, Kieran.
Okay. Cabo Shells, this has the potential to be one of the games of the weekend. Huge significance in terms of the promotion race. Shells, I have to say, John, have a very poor record in Stradbrook. We all know it's a difficult place to go. I'm fancying a home win. What's your sense of saying on this?
No, I'm going to go for an away win. I just think those signings are really bedding in at Shells. They're starting to show a bit more.
You think they're starting to click, yeah?
I think so, yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm going to go away win, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a draw. Cabin Teely, surprising us all.
Yeah, it'll be a tight one, I think, but Shells will definitely have to find a way to deal with the boy Manly.
That's true, yeah.
So let's see how that one plays out. But Drogheda to Longford, that's another big one in the First Division this weekend.
Great result for Drogheda last week. Longford sneaked to win against 10-man Limerick. Tough place to go. We saw Longford's playoff hopes dashed at Drogheda last season. I think they're in too good a form, though. Away win.
They beat Drogheda very comfortably early on in the season at home.
Well, they did, yeah, but that was at home, and Longford are exceptionally good at home. Away,
haven't lost yet this season.
No, well, they haven't. No, but I'm thinking to some of the performance, the ground out results more than doing anything away from home. Yeah.
Well, isn't that what you do away from home? Well, you're not expecting 3 and 4 nils away from home, are you?
No, I'm not. No, but I just don't think they're. I don't know. I think they'll win it, but I think it'll be very, very close.
Okay, so bottom line, you're going for a Longford win.
A Longford win, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to ravel on. I'm going for a Town win in that one.
Okay, right, Grant.
Limerick Bray.
Bray win.
Jeez, that was very very sharp. What's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, well, they'll have one of those days. McGlade will score 6. And, yeah, they didn't do it last week, so I just think they're very, very inconsistent. But
I think from a Limerick point of view, with everything going on off the pitch, you have to praise their players. You have to praise Tommy Barrett. They're still putting in a dramatic shift every week. Their performance against Longford was quite good. I think at home, I fancy Limerick.
Okay.
Going to the Premier Division, Bohemians against Cork. Are we going to see a reaction from those Cork City players?
Of all the matches they could have played, they wouldn't have wanted this one. Trip to Bohemians where the ground's going to be rocking, the stand's going to be bouncing, and Bo's are going to win it.
Oh, I like that. I can already hear the Bo's fans shouting, no, no.
Yeah,
go for
they're holding their heads.
Yeah.
Brian, so no.
I'm going to add a little bit of balance here. I think we'll see Cork probably look to go up there and play a solid game and try and come away with something just to steady the rot. I fancy a draw. I think Cork will set up quite defensively. It'll be up to Bohs to break them down. And they've had issue against Cork in recent seasons, so I think we might see a draw here.
Okay, fair enough.
Although, on that point, the Bohs will be desperate to get...
Are you changing your mind?
No, no. But they'll be desperate for a cup semi-final revenge.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm going to stick with my Bohs win, so apologies, Bohs fans.
Dundalk against Derry?
I'm going to go for a home win.
Yeah, I'm going to have to follow you on that. I just think Dundalk are absolutely in scintillating form at the moment. Their big-name players are putting in 5-star performances. I do remember a couple of seasons ago going to a Dundalk-Derry game in Oriel, and Derry came down and they managed to hold Dundalk to a scoreless draw. They can be a stubborn opposition, but... and their back four has improved dramatically on last season.
I just think Dundalk have gone up a step.
I just think they're a level above at the moment. I'm going to go with a Dundalk win, but you never know.
Pats host Waterford. For me, Waterford disappointing this season, Kieran. I can't get excited about them.
God, what's the atmosphere going to be like at this one after all the goings on off the pitch in the last few weeks?
I don't know.
I know a lot of Waterford fans, they're contemplating whether they should actually go or not go to this game. I've been following a couple of their Facebook groups and they're kind of torn between it. So it'll be interesting to see what type of crowd turns out. But on the pitch, what do you fancy?
I fancy a Pats win, Kieran.
Yeah.
I know they lost Monday, but, you know, they've been in decent form before that.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced by Pats at the moment. I know their form has picked up in the last couple of weeks, but... they're still a long way off what we thought they would be this season. I think it's fair to say that Waterford, obviously, they're going to be without their star man Heary, but they can be a stubborn opponent. I think we might see a draw here this weekend, but Pats will definitely be the hot favourites.
Absolute battle of the basements, Harps versus UCD.
Would it be too much to say this is do or die for Harps now at this stage?
Well,
they have to win these head-to-heads against UCD if they have any chance of staying up, surely.
They're the other promoted team. If they can't beat UCD at home, It is time to pack up, Hearts fans, I'm afraid.
I'd have to agree. And unfortunately, Hearts fans, I don't give you a vote of confidence here, which probably means they will win, but I've gone for a draw.
Yeah, I've gone for a draw.
I think it just used to be they would be delighted to leave Ballybuffet with a point. I think they might rein in that freestyle of play a little bit this weekend. It's a tight pitch up there. It probably won't suit UCD's style of play. Hearts missing a couple of players though. I just don't think their performances in the last couple of weeks have been enough to suggest they can get that first win. So I'm going to go with a draw, but Hearts really do need to get the 3 points in this one.
They do. It's where the goals are coming from, Kieran. That's been the problem all season.
Big, big problem.
Sligo host Shamrock Rovers. How's your mate Dante going to cope with the firepower in Rovers midfield?
Yeah, I don't think Sligo will, to be honest. I fancy Shamrock Rovers heavily for this one. And from a Shamrock Rovers point of view, they need to get back on track, need to get back winning after a rough couple of weeks. Sligo, very, very impressive performance against UCD, but Shamrock Rovers are on a whole different level this season in terms of UCD, so I've got to fancy Shamrock Rovers.
Agreed, same here, Kieran.
So, John, that brings us to the end of the show, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, that has been a great show, some great interviews, and I suppose we can't go without having a chat about our little road trip.
Yeah, well, where do we start, I suppose? That's the question.
Well, we made a decision to go and watch Balor against Carnarvon, didn't we? And, yeah, we had a bit of an eventful journey there, because of all the Welsh matches to go and see, we had to pick the one that was... Well, let's face it, mission impossible to get to. Yeah. So we had an hour and a half to the airport in the car with the flight. We had to get a train from Birmingham to Wrexham, and then a bus sat on top of the engine for an hour and a half from Wrexham to Balor. But I have to say, I found Balor was a lovely place, Kieran. Really enjoyed it.
Beautiful, yeah. I highly recommend it. In terms of the football, I think it's fair to say the standard is probably a long way off League of Ireland, but there's definitely similarities there, isn't there? The fans, small in numbers, but very, very passionate about their teams.
Yeah, well, we'd heard that the Kofi Army Carnarvon lads were in were in one of the pubs, so we went out the back and there was a huge marquee and we were greeted by over 100 Mexicans.
200 Mexicans, yeah. We were kind of...
There were flares going, smoke bombs going in this marquee.
We're not joking, that is genuinely what happened. Walked out the back thinking, might meet a few away fans here. Here was 200 Mexicans letting off smoke bombs and flares. I thought I'd had too many points at that stage, but
yeah. Well, it was funny because we got chatting to a few of their players and a few of their it's fair to say probably the board members and I can't remember, but I must have arranged a pre-season friendly.
Yeah, you must have floated the possibility of some type of, I don't know, a pre-season game between Longford and Carnarvon, because we were sitting in a Spoons the next day, Wetherspoons, and this email came through. Great to meet you lads, and we'd love to arrange a meeting to discuss further what was discussed last night. And
of course, neither of us could remember.
What's going on here? Yeah. So I sent an email back and it was, we'd love to arrange a pre-season between Carnarvon and Longford Town. So we've sent them the way of the club. It might happen, it might not. It'd be a great trip again, or them coming over here, the 200 Mexicans in the Longford Arms. I can just picture it now. But just a crazy trip, absolutely brilliant. Great to take in another league, you know.
And you actually saw John Breyer lost for words, because I think it was it Owen Tudor Jones that came across and tried to interview me for S4C. He'd seen the Longford Town flag, and for once shall we just say the refreshments had taken the better of me, and I couldn't get a word out.
Yeah, but of course my podcast experience came in handy. I dived into the rescue Gave it a little speech about why we were there, and a great, great crack altogether.
And we had a bit of an interesting meeting with a guy who managed Carmarthen, who actually managed them in the Europa League against Longford Town.
Yeah, so I'm sure our Longford listeners probably don't want to remember, but Longford dumped out of the Europa, or the UEFA Cup as it was then. They led 2-0 from the first leg, went over to Wales, 1-1 at half time. They couldn't lose it from there, but they were absolutely battered in the second half. And we always wanted to know, well, what did he say at half time? And here it is. Here's the exclusive. It was no great masterclass in terms of tactics or anything. He went up to the whiteboard. He wrote a number 6 on it. He said, "Yeah, 6 chances in that first half. Go out and create as many in the second, and we have a chance." And that's what happened. So
yeah.
But he came over and he spotted the Longford Town crest straight away, and he said to me, "I'll always remember Longford Town. I'll never forget walking out in front of the Flanker Park, as it was called then, and the stadium was packed and we had our own supporters." And he said it was the best moment of his life, even though they lost that game, but obviously came back in the second leg. So Really, really good moment there. It's amazing who you meet on these trips, isn't it?
Amazing. And we had planned to go to a conference match the next day, but unfortunately, roadworks killed that off. We're at Wrexham and Harrogate we were going to watch.
But we did get a look around the ground, a 10,000-seater. Like, it just shows the difference, I suppose, in terms of stadia. A non-league side in England, well, based in Wales, we're playing in the English leagues, 10,000-seater.
And did you upset the Bose fans again with your tweet?
The Daily Mail end, There was one end resembling is it the railway end in Daly Mount where there's only the remains of a terrace? So great trip, very educational, plenty of booze and a couple of very funny tales to tell there. So look, that brings us to the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it. If we've got a couple of our new Welsh friends listening in, thanks for your welcome, and we'll definitely be back, and hopefully we can get that friendly arranged and you can come over to Longford. But
we'll go to Carnarvon next, I think.
Yeah, definitely. They could be in Europe, you know.
Yeah, well, if they do and they get a tie that's handy for us, we'll try and make it.
Yeah, BTS on tour. But look, that's the end of the show. Thanks again to our three main sponsors, Flomax.ie, Diageo.ie and stmelsbrewing.com. We're on Twitter at Between Stripes. We're on facebook.com/Between the Stripes, and our website address is BetweenTheStripes.ie. We return next week. Might be a little bit earlier next week because I'm not going to lie, I'm a Spurs fan and I didn't think I'd ever see us in a Champions League semi-final, so I might have to find a way around missing that. Because
not convinced you're going to see him in a final neither, to be honest, Kieran.
I think it's still alive after last night, but look, we'll talk about that off air, John. Folks, we've gone way over time. Thanks to our three guests, absolutely superb stuff tonight. Please share this far and wide. Let's get one of our biggest audiences of the season, because I think it's fair to say that's been probably one of our best shows so far,
if not the best.
Folks, thanks very much. Speak to you again next week.
Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audio Boom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast, or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes, or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit BetweenTheStripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.